Welcome to the People of Bloomsbury podcast, the first book in the Curled Up and Cozy collection, narrated from the desk of the author, DJ Swales. Part 1, A New Day. Chapter 5, Tibby the Cat. Adjacent to Ridgemount Gardens, on the top floor of Little Lord Fauntleroy Mansions, Lorna Barclay checked her wristwatch and gazed out from the fifth floor window. Cauldrons bubbled on the stove behind her, filling the air of the small kitchen with deliciousness. As they often did, her eyes lingered on the line of beautiful yellow trees that ran parallel to the face of the neighbouring mansion block. Their leaves bewitched her for several seconds, glimmering with the dew of residual raindrops. "What kind of trees are those, anyway?" she asked herself, in her soft Belfast accent. None could say. The neighbours all shook their heads when asked. Lorna reached into an overhead cupboard and pulled out a stack of 10 squat cylindrical cardboard containers and as many circular lids. 15 minutes to go, she said, addressing Tibby, the ginger tabby that zigzagged furiously around her feet, almost tripping her. "I can feel your love, Tibby, but you'll kill me if you keep doing that." Lorna lifted the lid from each cauldron and stirred, then lovingly ladled her Aunt Sheila's famous stew into the first cardboard receptacle. When the stew level threatened the brim, she moved to the next container. Vegetables and tender chunks of beef filled a mysteriously rich sauce, which was exactly the same colour as the River Thames. Lorna's daily lunchtime deliveries had become her biggest window to the world since taking over her ageing aunt's burgeoning business. When Lorna wasn't cooking, she was gazing from the window, or tucked up in bed, or stretched on the sofa with a romance novel. Tibby was usually curled up on her feet. She claimed the slushy romance was all research, which was true. Like many people who lived in Bloomsbury, her fingers increasingly tingled at the thought of writing her first novel. "I may as well do it," she told Tibby over a shared can of tuna. "I have an ear for a good story. And after all, Mary Shelley, Virginia Woolf, and many others tramped through these very streets and wrote inside these buildings." Tibby purred in agreement and poured the air around Lorna, as if encouraging the stew heiress to reach for a pen that instant. As Lorna busied herself, the upstairs Bloomsbury flat around her was still exactly as her Aunt Sheila had left it 3 years before, after building up her stew business. "I don't want to change a thing," Lorna said when she moved in. Unlike most people, she meant it. Lorna was one of Sheila's 12 nieces who had vied for the Irish stew business. she was finally chosen after a series of cooking tests and a sudden spot quiz on matters of stew. Sheila had also been impressed by the quality of Lorna's ironing, noting that she even put perfect creases into her knickers and socks. She proved to have been the right choice, taking over as smoothly as a buttered hand might slide into a marigold glove. In the 2 years since she had taken over the day-to-day running of the business, Lorna looked forward to her aunt's quarterly inspection trips back to Bloomsbury from Ireland. No clients had been lost, aside from natural causes. Indeed, Sheila's stew was often requested as a final meal by those in hospices and nearby hospitals. When will the people ask for Lorna's stew? Lorna sometimes asked herself, before shaking off such selfish thoughts. Will I always live in the shadow of my aunt's large ladle? Deep down, she knew that few people had the luck to take over such a well-loved family business. On her inspection visits, Sheila watched Lorna's every move as she cooked and prepared the deliveries. There was never any bickering, as Lorna followed instructions to the letter, unlike her sisters, who supplemented recipes willy-nilly, or heaven forbid, followed their gut. Sheila would lean close to the cauldrons with Lorna, her cheek warming as her ears attuned to the bubbles in the thickening broth. If they were too light, she would order more corn flour. Sheila expressly forbade Lorna to cook the stew in anything but the handmade cauldrons that she had acquired with some difficulty back in Donegal. "I had to bend over backwards for that blacksmith," she said, with a distant look in her eyes. "After I found his forge, right on the edge of the towering cliffs of Slieve League, I almost broke my hip on his anvil." Sheila had spent a total of 40 years of her life working in London, during which time she had seen it all. Throughout her earlier migrant years, her strong Northern Irish accent had meant that she often had to repeat herself in whichever job she was working. "Green beans or sprite, sir?" she told Lorna she had to fruitlessly enunciate to the executives of the Bank of England. She had spent a decade working there as a silver service waitress in their senior private dining room, right at the top of the Old Lady of Threadneedle Street. "Oh, green beans or sprouts," one of the men had eventually responded in a cut-glass Etonian accent after much discussion had ensued. While young Irish girls whisked around them, the portly, wheezing executives had chortled and guffawed, straining the seams of their pinstriped suits. After rich puddings had been devoured, Sheila and her friends from Connemara, Galway and Donegal plucked crisp ironed napkins from the men's laps, overlooked by the paintings of imperious wigged men with faces just like those that were now ready for their naps. After escaping their shifts, Sheila and all the Irish girls would tumble back over London Bridge, where they shared a flat in Southwark. Sheila explained to Lorna how she had learned within a week which vegetable each dusty old mustachioed man preferred. I was born with a photographic memory, for sure, she said in her Belfast brogue. From the time I was doing my first jobs bagging potatoes or reading out the horse races in the bookies across the whole of Ulster, I could repeat any orders or details after hearing them only once. But if that's the case, why on earth did you keep asking those old men which vegetables they wanted every day, if you already knew? Lorna asked, to which Sheila was dumbstruck. She smiled awkwardly, but was impressed by her niece's keen mind. Lorna trained her eyes on her aunt's ears whenever she could, convinced that they swiveled at the slightest noise. If a taxi screeched, or an argument erupted outside a pub on the street below, they reacted, almost independently, like the eyes of the chameleons that Lorna had fed flies to while on holiday in Malta. They are a natural form of radar, she once whispered to Tibby in the kitchen when she dared to relax after a long day of her aunt's inspections. What is? Sheila called sharply from the living room, her ears never failing her. On the first occasion that the young Sheila had to abandon her London adventures to temporarily return to Belfast, she left behind a new job in the posh food hamper department of Fortnum and Mason's. It was just as well, as she was tired of packing gourmet hampers of Epicurean delights for the lives of the rich and famous. She harboured ambitions to be one of them herself, she just wasn't sure how to do it yet. She mailed ahead one of the hampers, so it was almost there to greet her in Belfast when she disembarked from the old Liverpool ferry. Sheila had returned to Belfast to care for a sick friend, one who used to steal her sweets in their school playground. That was how forgiving Sheila truly was. At the time, she hadn't a clue of the stew-filled destiny that awaited her in Belfast. Her initial plans for 6 months at home soon became stretched, especially after the same friend first broke one ankle, tripping on a curb on the Falls Road, then another just after she had recovered, while dashing from a renowned ice bun bakery on the Shankill Road. However, during what seemed like endless days of bed baths and reading Mills and Boons aloud to her unlucky friend, a lucrative destiny in London still awaited Sheila. A few years later, she would take up what would prove to be a triumphant residency in Bloomsbury's Little Lord Fauntleroy Mansions. Thank you for joining me, DJ Swales, on my podcast and today's reading from my upcoming book, People of Bloomsbury. I really appreciate all of the support my listeners give me on Patreon and buying my books, and I hope you'll join me for the next episode. Thank you so much. Thank you.